How do you understand your company's reputation as an employer? Metrics vary from company to company, making it hard to benchmark your progress against competitors. This is where the Employer Brand Index comes in. It analyzes what employees, candidates, and alumni are saying about your company and quantifies these findings into a single score. We can even dive into your talent competitors to really understand how competitive your employer brand is. Our team of talent analysts collect all available data points, discover patterns, and deliver a report full of insights and recommendations. Want to know more? Go to employerbrandindex.co.
Hey, Sunsvason! It's Jorgen Sundberg here with the Employer Branding Podcast by Link Humans, London's employer branding agency. Today, we're talking recruitment marketing. So topical. It's almost up there with AI and cryptocurrencies. Super interesting interview this week with lots of insider tips and tricks, and I think you'll find it very useful. Now, while you're listening to this, here's a tip. Please do us a favor and leave a review in the podcast app on your iPhone, and you'll automatically be in the draw to win a bottle of champagne. Good luck, and let's start the show. Katrina Kibben, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Let our listeners know, please, who you are and what you do.
Absolutely. So my name is Katrina Kibben, and I'm the lead strategist and founder of 3 Years Media. At its most basic, I help people solve content challenges within their recruitment marketing, because in this world, it matters more than ever how you say something. So I've helped clients with everything from job description training to their career site and referral programs.
Okay, right. And your company's name is 3 Years Media. So I have to ask, how did that name come about?
Right, because from seeing me on the camera that I do not have 3 ears. There's two parts to the story. The first is one of those, you know, when I was growing up, my family always told me you have 2 ears and 1 mouth and that you should listen a lot more than you talk. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's one of my, I don't think so. I know that's one of my core values, even if I tend to talk a little too much. But the second part and the more adorable part of the story is that I have 2 dogs. Their names are Ruby and Lyric, and they are my chief toot officer, my CTO, and Lyric is the chief operating officer. So if you look at my dogs when they're sitting next to each other, my lab has 1 ear that stands straight up while her other ear kind of bends down. And my fiance and I would jokingly call them 3 ears. And then, so fast forward to right after I left my previous role and started this company, I had a pending speaking opportunity, and they asked me to change my company name for their website. And I jokingly said 3 Years Media, and it's kind of stuck ever since.
Fantastic. And I'm sure we can see the COO and the CTO on your Instagram feed, yes?
Oh, yes. All over my Instagram. They're actually on the 3 Years Media website, too.
Fantastic. Right. Okay. So you mentioned content challenges. What is the number one content challenge in a talent space right now, in your opinion?
I think it's really translating your authentic story into the practical application, right? So there was a phase, and I think it's slowly dying down, where everyone was talking about their value proposition. Everyone was talking about pillars. And it's not to say that everyone has one now or that they've all figured it out, but the next phase and kind of where I see a lot of companies struggling right now is how you take something that sounds so beautiful and really captures the essence of your company and turn that into the practical recruitment marketing application. So how does your EVP and your pillar translate into a job description? How does it translate into your career's website, right? And how do you create that message as a consistency in every experience?
Okay, so if you look at recruitment marketing, it's a term that's been around for a while. Mm-hmm. Why would you say that it is important, and why specifically right now?
I think recruitment marketing is more important than ever. And I'm sure everyone says that, but the numbers to back it up. So if you look at the U.S. unemployment rate, even the global unemployment rate, we're at historic lows. Mm. And what that means is that there's more competition than ever. Great example. I was talking to a customer last week who was posting a very high-level role at a college here in Boulder, Colorado. And this role, they posted it last year. So there's a retention issue, but ignore that. They posted this job a year ago, and they had over 150 people apply to that job. I'm going to let you guess. How many people do you think applied for that exact same job description this year?
936.
31.
Nice.
31. So they went from 150 something to 31 this year, and that's why they called. Because things are obviously really different right now, and knowing that the unemployment rate is so low, that's going to bleed into the experiences and make the job seeker they're going to be more decisive about their job experience now than they ever have been. They're going to say no to that 45-minute apply. They're going to say no when they read a job description that rubs them wrong, because they can.
Okay. Employer branding versus recruitment marketing smackdown. What's the difference in your view?
Yeah. So I'm sure there are a lot of different definitions. And I'm sure you might even have one that we can discuss. But so for me, employer brand is the tone. It's the story. It's what it feels like and why it matters. Recruitment marketing is just how you translate that story into the interactions. It's the real, the tangible element of employer branding.
Yeah, so I would almost say like employer brand is the static bit. Well, the one that you revisit every 3 years, and that's what sets the tone, the EVP, and so on. Whereas employer branding is more the activity which becomes recruitment marketing in a way, which is more where you're activating the employer brand.
Exactly, exactly. Recruitment marketing is that function that activates your story.
And what's a step-by-step guide to success with recruitment marketing?
So, when I saw this question, it definitely made me think, because I think so many people are looking for a formula, right? That's the essence of speed. If I can create a formula, I can increase outputs and do it faster, theoretically. And unfortunately, I don't have a full step-by-step, but I do suggest and always recommend that your first step should be listening. And the reason that is if you're going to create a recruitment marketing plan that is really for that right person, it should start by talking to people who look and who not look physically, right, but look in the details like that person, and trying to figure out what they love and what really motivates them so that you can create great recruitment marketing. So in summary, I guess my step-by-step plan is, if you start with listening, everything else will be better than 90% of what's on the market.
And what are some ways to go about doing a listening exercise, or perhaps it's an ongoing process, but what are the best ways?
Absolutely. So if you're trying to do this at scale, I love using free tools like Google Forms to create a really quick survey that someone can take on their phone, and is fully optimized to take on their phone, where you can gather information like, when you wake up in the morning, what's the first social media application you open? Or a detail like, if I told you you had to go find a job right now, what are the first three things you would do? And all of that's really interesting in recruitment marketing, right? Because we can use those answers to tailor not only our buying strategy, but the message that we use.
And how do we reach these people, and how do we make them willing to reply to these questionnaires?
So if the people already exist in your organization, let's say you're adding 100 new customer service representatives this year, obviously, you know, go internal. If you're looking external and trying to get this information as a recruiter, theoretically, you already have a few people identified through your sourcing efforts. And the strategy that I like to take is I simply go to them and say, I'm doing some research about a role. And I really want to understand your preferences so that when I build this out, I'm using expert advice, not my assumptions. And you would be surprised how often that conversation turns into something bigger, because you're going into it instead of saying like, I'm going to recruit you, you're going to be my next blah, blah, blah manager. I'm going in and saying, I know you're the expert. I want your advice. And you build trust first instead of trying to build a transaction from moment one.
I like that tactic. All right. And what are some of the pitfalls that you see companies doing in and around recruitment marketing?
I think the biggest one is copying and pasting. In general, there is an epidemic of plagiarism when it comes to recruitment marketing, where someone sees something they think is cool or, you know, they want to replicate in their company. And instead of taking the concept and replicating the concept in their own voice, they replicate every single element and expect it to work the same way. And that's not how recruitment marketing works. Not the good stuff, at least.
And do you have a number of different boilerplate messages that you use that have been tried and tested, or how do these come about?
So what I like to do, so instead of projects where someone comes to me and says, Katrina, I want you to rewrite 400 job descriptions. I think that's a flawed thought process. And so what I do in response to questions like that, I take a step back and say, I want to build you a formula for success that's replicable, or else you're going to have to pay me to write these job descriptions every 3 years. Do you want to pay this every 3 years, or do you want to build a model that makes it easy and trainable for every person to follow your guidelines and have access to best in class examples? And I can tell you what they say 99% of the time, which is, oh, no, I do not want to pay you to do this twice. You know, I would much rather have a model. And so I build models based on extensive research, both into vocabulary and structure, to use for both their job descriptions or even email outreach, so they can create something that's targeted and tangible for them. I've even gone so far as to create a job description library for a company who really felt uncomfortable with just giving a model and letting people write. They needed a drag and drop job description library, and we built something like that. And even that is better than rewrite 400 job descriptions that are relevant today.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So, well, that's interesting. So let's talk formulas. Let's talk guidelines. Let's talk models. What normally goes into this? Is it the type of language you use or is it more about being appealing someone's emotional side, or is it the visuals? What is normally wrong in job descriptions, and what are some of the quick fixes?
All right. So I always start with company information. So like I said earlier, I believe recruitment marketing is a function of employer brand. And so I read what they already have. I don't do EVP and pillar work, but I look at the content that they've already created and what exists, what their tone is. So that's kind of the first, I guess it's the pillar of the output. I want to understand how they communicate internally, because I want their job description to reflect that. So for example, if this is a company where they send 5-page emails, I will write a longer job description. It'll be structured a little differently for conversion, and I apply those conversion elements, but it will sound like an email that you might get from a colleague if you work there. The point being, I want to attract people who like that, right? Who like a lot of information, who like reading a long job description. So the first one is figuring out kind of the tonality elements, and that comes directly from who the company already is. From there, I look at marketing elements. So we'll look at subject lines. And remember, you know, tone has to play into this, because some companies are not okay with bad, like with witty subject lines. Let's not call them bad, but you know, things that are witty or a little subjective, they might not like that, right? So then we work on building a formula that's best in class for their standards. The subject, I always start with the subject line before even thinking about the other elements, because that's the reactionary point. That's how you get the, would you click on this, right? And I can test that with those people that I'm interviewing. And the formula is something that is built over time. It actually includes industry data as well. So for example, if I know that in the manufacturing industry, they're expecting a application process to take a while, but this company has a best-in-class application process, I'll include elements like that. So like, unlike typical manufacturing companies, we try to close jobs within 20 days. So I want to talk to you in the next 3.
Got it.
Right. And so it's all about kind of figuring out the positioning. And the other piece of that is looking at the objections. I think a lot of people don't think about objections when they're writing job descriptions and emails. What is going to make someone say no in the first email? In when I look at the job description, because of my impression of the industry or the role, I always try to address that up front.
And addressing objections, will you do almost like an FAQ, asking the tough questions with some answers, or how would you do that?
I hate to keep saying it depends, but
yeah.
Considering I started this by saying that listening is one of my core values, I think it's justified, right? So I've done FAQs. I also, I really like the element of giving people a no at the beginning. So I've been researching this concept of no as a recruitment marketing tactic. And basically, you start by telling people why they should opt out.
Nice.
So for example, this actually, we saw this with a CEO who included a video where he said, okay, I want you to stop right now. So this was an interstitial video between the apply button and the first page of the apply, where he actually explained, like, this is how my company works. If you are XYZ, I don't think you should apply. And I've been researching that as a psychological element of persuasion and using that in my job descriptions and emails.
So almost like the warts and all approach. So really telling people some of the bad bits and getting to opt out. I like that as well. It's the 80-20 rule. Try to appeal to the 20% and repel the 80%.
Exactly. Because if you get 1,000 resumes, you're not in a better position than 100 qualified ones.
No. I mean, just ask Google, who deal with over 1 million resumes a year.
Or Deloitte. They get 4 million a year.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I'm sure Google gets even more than.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So what are your thoughts on specific landing pages for a job? So tools like Clinch, for instance, they will build a landing page, perhaps with some videos, some visuals and so on. Is that required? Does that increase conversions and quality of applicants?
It absolutely does. Quality is a standard. So to back up a little bit, we mentioned briefly psychological elements.
Yep.
And I consider that the look of your landing page is a psychological element. There are things that will make people opt out immediately. For example, I actually was interviewing an accountant, and I mentioned in my job, my little, you know, job overview, that I was really looking for someone who's highly technical because I want this to be a completely remote relationship. And I got an application from someone whose headshot was sideways. And I'm like, if you cannot balance your headshot, what makes you think that I want you balancing my books? The reason I bring that up is because careers pages need to be excellent in the way that there's nothing fundamentally wrong. So There are a million stats that'll tell you, oh, add a video and it'll give you this percentage, add a this and it'll do, you know, add an image, add a color. And all of that is great. But the one thing that you have to remember is, does it work? That's the only thing a landing page has to do, right? It has to get the conversion. So add more, take more away, but focus on the conversion pieces and use traditional marketing. So there's a site called Lead Pages.
Yep.
So I'm not suggesting that you dump your CRM. I love Clinch. I think there's a really amazing information in there. But you can use Lead Pages as a model because they'll actually show you the highest converting pages across their entire system. You can use that as a baseline.
Yeah, it's a good tool. I actually interviewed Lead Pages on this podcast a long, long time ago.
No way. Small world.
Yeah, Tim Page, I think it was. And you mentioned video a few times then. Is it worth investing in a short video for each job role? Or are we wasting our time here? Should we focus on copy and headlines?
It depends on who the applicant is.
So I think who does it appeal to?
All right. So high volume, low retention roles, people in call centers, in sales, people who quickly move from job to job because their attention span, both for their job and a job description, is very low. And so they're looking for a quick experience to decide yes or no. It works particularly well on the, I hate to use this word, I'm sure someone will call me out for it, but the millennials. You tend to see a higher open and activation rate with millennials and anybody who was kind of born after the 80s, the 1980s, obviously, because they are a video generation and they're digital natives. So they grew up, you know, where at 15, I didn't have a cell phone, right? When I needed to make a phone call or talk to someone, I mean, I had AIM, right? AOL Instant Messenger, but I didn't have a phone. I didn't have the access to quick information, video tutorials, right? This is how they learned. And so they expect that when they're applying to a job, they can learn about the job. However, to caveat all of that, when you said investment, I want people to be realistic about investment because I've heard a lot of video firms charging in the like tens, $20,000-$30,000 for a video. Look at solutions that are quicker and have flexibility for your company if you do want to scale video. My personal favorite is Skill Scout. I am an advisor, so asterisk on that. But the reason I like them is because they offer a full DIY where literally if you have a phone, you become the videographer. You shoot the film, right? You send them the clips. They even give you a little formula for what to film. And within 48 hours, they'll kick your video back to you.
Nice. Yeah. So Charu Malhotra was on this podcast a couple of weeks ago. She recommended a tool called Send It, I think, or Seen It, which I think does something very similar. All right. So if we look at the recruitment marketing tech stack, in addition to Skill Scout, what else is essential, you think?
Yeah. So I want to give a shout out to Ben Gledhill over at Yodel for this.
Oh, yeah. Because
he definitely influenced my perspective. And he actually does a little chart and he updates it regularly of his tech stack. Mine is something to measure. So Excel, Google Analytics, HubSpot, actually, if you just plug their code in, but you don't use their forms, you can get a lot of information without paying for that tool. You need content planning tools because we can't do everything in real time, right? So that's your social media managers, your Feedlys, relevant content, right? How do I get it? How do I share it? Those will help you automate that. Creation. So I really like tools like Canva, MailChimp, Lead Pages, like I mentioned earlier, because I like to be able to turn things around quickly and be agile, right? So if I deliver an image, I don't want it to come from some high-priced designer who takes, you know, has a three-day turnaround when I just need a quick image to add to my social media post. the video editor. So either using a tool like SkillScout or having some kind of video editing software that makes it easy for you. And the last one is your phone, right? You should be able to test on your phone, make calls from your phone, contact people. There should be a lot of things that are happening on your phone too.
Absolutely. Great. And if we look at measuring the return on investment rather than the results, what are some of the good metrics that you've worked with, and what would you recommend our listeners to use?
Yeah, so always use A-B testing. There are books on it. There are guides on it, all kinds of information. But your kind of fundamental should be, I want to A-B test. And then going a little deeper, so I'm going to give some generic metrics. These will apply. The name of the metric might be a little different based on the application, right? So a landing page versus a social media ad, but always look at time. So how long they spend engaging with it, and if that's going up or down over time, how they engage. So do they click? Do they take activation? That's where your A-B testing comes in. So I always do a small test first and have some kind of information to go into it. And the third one, and this is a measurement perspective that most people forget about, always have a baseline, right? So always know what your historical data is. Always know how this performed in the past or how it performs traditionally across your industry. That data does exist in most cases. And then you can use that as your growth point. Don't ever start a project that you plan on measuring without a baseline.
Good advice. Right. If we look at companies who are doing recruitment marketing well, who can we learn from out there?
Well, here's just one cool example, a global example. So IKEA actually hid job descriptions inside every pack of furniture for a while. And I thought that was so brilliant, right? Because they're tapping into their market. I work with a lot of customers who want to make their customers their employees. And this is a great example of how you do that. So this campaign, all it cost them was their print costs, which is awesome because they printed so many of them, right? They could do it at scale. And the customers delivered the career information to their own houses, which solves problem number one. That campaign resulted in over 4,000 applications and 300 hires.
Nice.
Yeah. So that whole idiom about, oh, your customers are your best candidates. That's actually true. Proof.
Yeah, I wonder if the job description had, if it was a visualization like you know the normal assembly instructions on IKEA.
I'll send you the link to the case study. They had some of the pictures of the elements they posted.
Fantastic. Yeah. Right, and what do you think is the next big thing in recruitment marketing? And you're not allowed to say AI.
Or I could say it depends, right? No,
yeah.
That's been my theme. No, I'm kidding. All right. So I think I'm kind of torn on this one. It's either Google for Jobs or assessments. And here's why. All right. So Google for Jobs, I don't actually think the real impact that they can create has been fully realized. And so people are starting to forget that they have pretty much taken over the market, or that their ATS has made it onto the top 25. Within the first 5 years of existing, which is insane, right? If you look at that list, most of them are legacies or they've been around at least 10 years. Google for Jobs, like, leaped so many people in that category to make that list. And their impact on search and the ATS, I mean, that could change everything, right? And so on the assessment side, I've been thinking one of the kind of problems that keeps coming up is this quality of hire, the retention, right? People get into the job and they're not staying. And so it creates a lot of gaps. And in this market, you don't want the gaps. Your strategy is to retain the people you already have. And so something that I've been seeing, and I'm hoping becomes a trend, is that we start to do paid assessments in the application process. And I think both sides of the hiring equation would really benefit from that, right? So it's a quick interim gig that happens between the interview and acceptance where you do some function of the work and you get paid for it, right? But that, I think that moment where you get to see, you get to work with someone, work with the team and deliver a result, I think that is the ultimate assessment opportunity, and I'm hoping it becomes the next big thing.
Wow, that's interesting. Have you seen that actually working in any companies or any specific job roles already?
I have. So Skill Scout, to reference them again, they do two things really well. So their product is really great, but they do recruitment marketing incredibly well. So they dumped the traditional apply process. And so after you apply, you get the paid gig. They give everyone the chance to do the paid gig. It's smart because they're a video company, right? And it helps them get quality people that they might not have noticed from the resume. So for example, they just hired a 17-year-old who has incredible video skills who you never would have hired if you looked at their resume, because he did a video for them, right? So they use that video then to show as a work sample when they go out to clients. So the client will be like, you know, who am I working with? They already have a work sample built in from day one.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Great. All right. Final question, Katrina. Where can our listeners learn more about your work, and where can they see your dogs online, and how can they connect with yourself?
Yeah. So I'm pretty easy to find because I'm the only Katrina Kibben in the world. Nice. So if you know how to spell my name, that'll help. Or just go to 3earsmedia.com.
Yep. And you're on all social media channels under the sun. Yes.
Exactly. And my name on all of them is Katrina Kibben.
Very simple. Great. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right. I hope that was useful. Everything Katrina and I discussed will, of course, be in the show notes article, which you'll be able to find at employerbrandingpodcast.com. And don't miss Katrina, COO and CTO, that's Chief Toot Officer, at 3earsmedia.com. Now, to make sure that you stay up to date on all things employer brand, stuff like events, podcasts, articles, etc., go to linkhumans.com and sign up to our monthly newsletter. Just scroll down and you'll see the sign-up form right there. Now, if you find this podcast useful, please do me a favor and write a review in Apple Podcasts. Just an honest review will do. It really helps us to reach more people. Many thanks in advance for leaving a review. What's that? A thank you is not enough. Okay. I'll throw in a bottle of champagne to a random person leaving a review. I mean, you don't have to be random, but you will be picked at random. You might get picked at random. That's kind of how it works. Anyway, thank you so much for leaving a review and good luck. Finally, this week, I'll be speaking about measuring the ROI of employer brand at the Employer Branding Strategies Conference in San Diego. So let me know if you'd like to see the slides. I'll try to post them to SlideShare or somewhere else and put the link in the show notes as soon as they are up. And of course, feel free to check out the Employer Brand Index, which is, of course, our approach to measuring your company's reputation as an employer, perhaps compared to your competitors, tough to say that, to make things interesting. Check it out at employerbrandindex.co and reach out to me if you'd like to see a sample report at jorgen@linkhumans.com. And I'll make sure to put all these links in the show notes, of course. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in. Look forward to catching up with you next time. And that is it. Hey, doll!
What do you call a dog with no legs?
No idea.
Nothing. They're not going to come.